League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
I just felt like I need to tell you that, you know, Father's Day is coming up. And, you know, you can't call me daddy in front of your dad. That's just for you and me. And if you're anything like me, when Father's Day comes around, you're kind of the same old story, right? Socks, grill tools, repeat, same thing every time. And this year, I'm trying to do better. And that's when I found Quince. And they made buying a thoughtful gift for my dad so easy. Quince has all the pieces dads actually want to wear, like organic cotton silk polos, European linen beach shorts, and comfortable pants for everything from weekend hangouts to nice dinners. And the best part of it all, everything with Quince is priced. And the best part of it all, everything with Quince is priced 50 to 80% less than what you'd find at similar brands. By working directly with top artisans and cutting out the middlemen, Quince gives you luxury pieces without the crazy markups. And Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes. The shirt I'm wearing right now, yeah, look at your phone real quick. Gotcha, you can't see me, this is a podcast. But this shirt I'm wearing right now, so smooth, so light, and for me, one of the biggest things, just because of my sensory issues, is it's breathable. Like, it doesn't feel like I'm gonna be sweating just because I'm wearing this thing. I also got my dad a nice pair of blue shorts, because that dude loves wearing, basically, as long as it's blue, he'll wear it. So for the dad who deserves better than basic, Quince has you covered. All you got to do is go to quince.com/chill for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. Yeah, that's a whole year. Yeah. That's quince.com/chill to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/chill. Thank you again to Quince for sponsoring today's episode. Everybody, and welcome back to the Chilluminati podcast, episode 173. As always, I'm one of your hosts, Mike Martin, joined by the Tom Hanks and that dog from Turner and Hooch of LA.
Hooch!
Jesse and Alex.
Hooch!
What?
Isn't the dog called Hooch?
Yes.
Yeah, the dog from Turner and Hooch.
Hooch.
Yeah, and he's saying that one of us is Turner, one of us is Hooch. Based on names alone, I don't think I could be a Hooch.
Why not?
I think Alex is the Hooch.
What's wrong with you being Hooch?
There's no, I think you're more of a Hooch.
You a Hoochie?
Could I pull
you're
off
a Hoochie
Hooch?
Mama?
No. You could pull off Hooch.
How does he get Hooch? He ends up with the Hooch?
I don't even think I could pull off Turner.
Yeah. Isn't he a cop?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know about this.
What's the one with the monkey?
I don't know which. Mathis, which one of us is the fucking dog?
I've never seen the movie, so what? I don't know.
Yeah, that's fine. Yours is good.
I'm going to go Jesse then. Jesse's the dog.
I'm the dog?
Damn. You're Hooch.
You're Hooch, dude.
I'm no Hooch.
I'm no Hooch. I can't live. What do you mean the one with
Hooch-a?
The monkey?
There's one with the monkey. Is that BJ and the BJ and the bear? Is that one?
BJ and the bear.
Oh, didn't we bring that up in our Ed Boon series? Like the monkey shit.
Also, Turner and Hooch is like young, attractive Tom Hanks and the ugliest dog I've ever seen. The ugliest, saddest dog.
That's literally the movie. That's the movie. You just pitched the movie just now.
Handsome young Tom Hanks.
Yeah. And the ugliest dog you've ever seen.
Fresh off of Mazes and Monsters.
They also remade the movie, which is just the worst thing I've ever seen.
No, wasn't it a show?
Yes, they remade it with that guy from...
Drake and Josh or whatever that show, yeah.
Yes, yeah. The one that wasn't a criminal.
Drake and Josh, what?
Yeah.
Turner and Hooch, really?
They remade it?
The Turner and Hooch reboot, baby.
The reboot? Get out of here.
The reboot.
Disney's Turner and Hooch.
Being a child star does it to you, man.
Yeah.
That's called druggies.
What? I didn't know that. Or, you know, I do lots of it. I am a drug Omancer.
Oh, actually, that's probably not true. I'm looking at it now. His normal photos look great, but the photo, the stock photo of him they used for the new Turner and Hooch movie, he just looks sad.
And I think that makes him
look, yeah.
He's just like, yeah. It's for the paycheck.
But his normal photos, I'm looking at him, he seems like a normal looking dude, although that could be editing, but you'd imagine they'd edit the posters, whatever. Why are we talking about this?
He's married with a kid, on? I know that.
Hey, you know what we should talk about instead?
Patreon.com/ChillUminatiPod. There you go.
There you save us.
Yeah, you know what? Let me tell you something about Patreon.com/ChillUminatiPod. It is a fine. It's a fine place to go.
Thank you for that.
For all kinds of stuff.
Like what?
If you want to go there, listen, I mean, if you're begging me to tell him, I guess I must.
I'm you know so what I mean? Begging you.
I tried to reel it in, but you know what?
No, I'm
what.
Begging. Please.
Okay, you know what? Minisodes. You get ad-free episodes. You get art. You get pre-sale. What kind of place isn't it? And you know what else? Rotten Popcorn just came out. And it's our new show all about movies where we watch really strange movies. I'm going to say something, though. Real talk. The movie that we watched recently was called Running with the Devil. It's on Netflix. That shit was nuts.
Yeah.
Fucking insane
Loved
movie.
Loved every
Maybe,
minute of it.
God, man, that had me on the edge of my seat from start to finish. And the way that documentary ends is unfair. Like, I won't say anything.
It's
go watch it. It's the newest Rotten Popcorn up on Patreon.
Yeah.
But that movie ends and I think I screamed. Like, that was insane. That whole fucking thing was nuts.
If you don't sign up for the Patreon, you can get that episode of Rotten Popcorn sometime in the very distant future.
About 6 months.
Yeah, about
but
6 months.
But hey, another one
now.
Just came out if you are not on Patreon, and it's the one we watched the original Zach Bagans masterpiece. My goodness.
That's for everyone. That's already, you already have that. You're welcome.
That's out right now.
Thanks to patreon.com/ChillUminatiPod.
That was another good one, though. That documentary was another good choice. The Ghost Hunters one. No, the Ghost Adventures, rather.
It riled me just the right amount.
Yeah. Yep. They also need to go one place else, Alex.
Oh, yeah? Is that right? Is it Los Angeles, California?
Ooh.
To see us in real life and go buy your six for a dollar or whatever it is, glow-in-the-dark vampire fangs at Target so you can put them in for Alex's big smile 1 minute
All
into
six
the show?
Fangs? Like some sort of shark?
Put them in your mouth. Put them in your eyeballs like that dude from The Sandman. Put them in your ears. You know?
Oh, you have two little hands?
I want to take a picture of the whole crowd with them smiling teeths because now... This stupid random thing you said off like the top of your head in one episode.
Whose fault is it really? Nobody
Yours.
Knows.
It's Mine. Your fault. Yeah.
Maybe not. Maybe.
I'm going to have to, before the show starts, I'm going to have to check and make sure everyone has their teeth in. So I will be
going to bring extra teeth just to be
at
safe.
At the door kisses to make sure everyone's teeth are in.
Open mouth kisses though, because you have to see.
Well, I got
to
put my tongue in there to make sure the teeth. Right. Like that
right,
checks
right.
out.
Yeah.
Alex was like, no.
Let's just debrand this to the big smile. I don't want this to have my name on it.
Alex's big smile.
Hashtag tested by Jesse.
Let me test it with my tongue.
This is called Chilluminati presents the big smile.
No, Alex's big smile. Yeah. This is Alex Fossiani presents the Alex big smile at the Alex show live.
That's a little confusing, I think, for the people.
No, not confusing
all right.
at all.
All right. Well, come to that. ChilluminatiPod.com. Buy your tickets now. They're great. Just like Frosted Flakes.
I do like Frosted Flakes.
Yeah.
They're great.
What's your favorite cereal?
What's my
Don't
favorite
worry about
cereal?
Health. Favorite cereal. Don't worry about health.
My favorite cereal?
Yeah.
Killers.
Oh! Boys, after what was actually a bit of a bigger break than I expected from true crime, looking at aliens, cryptids, feet. Historical mysteries, feet. Yeah, all kinds of good stuff. Weed,
huge,
is that what you said?
Huge feet.
Feet, yeah, big feet. I think huge. You said weed. And I was like, when were we examining weed?
Dude, I've been examining weed for the last 15 years, bro.
But with all that said, it's finally time to return to true crime because 2022 is the year of true crime, if you forgot. So with my continuing journey to broaden your knowledge of these things, even if it's unwillingly at this point, I want to continue hitting what I would consider the classics of serial killer, the thing that sits in pop culture, the ones that sit in pop culture the most. Much like John Wayne Gacy, today's topic focus is one that I'm absolutely certain the both of you and probably a majority, if not every listener, knows about. And that's Jeffrey Dahmer.
I mean, even if you hadn't heard of him before, it's very likely that you have heard of him recently.
Yeah.
Because there's literally just like, what, last week, the week before, they launched the Dahmer Netflix show.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's like a huge thing. Everybody's talking about it. I keep hearing people talk about it like in the wild. Like, I'm standing there having coffee and two people are like, oh my God, have you watched Dahmer? Like,
yeah, apparently that's crazy. it's really, really good. I haven't watched it yet. I plan on watching it between this episode and next episode because it really wasn't necessary for this episode. But I'm interested to see what they do with like how much fiction they throw in or how really close to the actual truth the whole show goes. I'm excited to watch it.
Yeah, I haven't watched it yet, but I'm interested to have this. I've been purposely waiting because I know this is going to be more fact based. And then yes, I'm going to go watch that afterwards and see what the vibe is.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I'm sure, like you said, the both of you kind of know the basic story. Dahmer in his little apartment where he brutally killed and tortured 17 victims while dabbling in cannibalism. It's kind of like the meat and potatoes of what people know about it. But much like Gacy, there's a whole lot more to the story. And Dahmer, in many ways, stands apart from so many of the other serial killers that we've covered and will cover on the show. So if you got your... We should make these serial killer bingo cards. We really should make some. I feel like it would be a great idea. You know, get those ready because I'm curious how many of the boxes we'll actually check off with Dahmer. And as always is the case, the series isn't here to glorify or add to the myth of Dahmer and his horrible crimes. Instead, it's more of a deeper look into the actual story, see who he actually was, and lay bare the fact that this man, no matter how he may have seemed on the outside, is and was a terrible person who should have been arrested much sooner than he was. And in that, we get to examine once again the failure of the police due to whom the victims ended up being, also known as the Lesser Dead. But we talk again much more about that in the second episode.
And if you don't believe us, just wait to hear how many times me and Jesse go, man, during this.
Yeah, exactly that.
I'm already feeling that. Are you kidding? The minute you bring up the police, I had two thoughts. One, I was like, it's always the police who were like, I guess we'll let them go. But then I also had the thought that, is that because these cases are so rare that we focus on that part rather than maybe the other times where the police catch the guy before it becomes a serial killer? But
no, because at least not in this story. No,
sure. It's just one of those things. I'm trying to come up with a reasoning before I'm like, they did it again. They screwed up again. They're just terrible at it.
Off the top of my head, I can think of three distinct instances they could have stopped him so much early on where they had enough evidence and reason to do so and then did not. But again, that's something we will be. And that's the point of this. You know, we're going to be looking at. Yeah, it's gonna be super fun. I can't wait. We'll be examining that police failure further. What makes Dahmer so fascinating as a serial killer is how many of us can kind of see ourselves in younger Dahmer. His social awkwardness, his very deep loneliness. The difference is that we don't all go off and become horrible fucking serial killers to cope with our own issues. It's also the reason I think and believe the Dahmer story is one that's so often told and retold over the decades. As Jesse just said, Netflix just released another Dahmer story onto their service a week ago to join the dozens of others out there that have kind of come out over the decades.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at lower.com field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at columbuscrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
I just felt like I need to tell you that, you know, Father's Day is coming up. And, you know, you can't call me daddy in front of your dad. That's just for you and me. And if you're anything like me, when Father's Day comes around, you're kind of the same old story, right? Socks, grill tools, repeat, same thing every time. And this year, I'm trying to do better. And that's when I found Quince. And they made buying a thoughtful gift for my dad so easy. Quince has all the pieces dads actually want to wear, like organic cotton silk polos, European linen beach shorts, and comfortable pants for everything from weekend hangouts to nice dinners. And the best part of it all Everything with Quince is priced. And the best part of it all, everything with Quince is priced 50 to 80% less than what you'd find at similar brands. By working directly with top artisans and cutting out the middlemen, Quince gives you luxury pieces without the crazy markups. And Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes. The shirt I'm wearing right now, yeah, look at your phone real quick. Gotcha, you can't see me, this is a podcast. But this shirt I'm wearing right now, so smooth, so light, and for me, one of the biggest things, just because of my sensory issues, is it's breathable. Like, it doesn't feel like I'm gonna be sweating just because I'm wearing this thing. I also got my dad a nice pair of blue shorts, because that dude loves wearing, basically, as long as it's blue, he'll wear it. So for the dad who deserves better than basic, Quince has you covered. All you got to do is go to quince.com/chill for free shipping on your order and 365 day returns. Yeah, that's a whole year. That's quince.com/chill to get free shipping and 365 day returns. quince.com/chill. Thank you again to Quince for sponsoring today's episode. Even to this day, he's a fascinating person to kind of look at as a study, as he bucks so many of the trends that serial killers tend to fall into. And in that, he kind of becomes easier to empathize with on a surface level, but that's not who he truly was. Deep down, like so many of the others, Dahmer was a monster not worthy of any sympathy whatsoever. He, much like many other serial killers, was just excellent at putting on an act. So, with all of that said, a quick shout out to our primary source for this specific episode, the book called The Shrine of Jeffrey Dahmer, written by Brian Masters. This thing came out in 1993. It's just a very good, like, solid true crime read of an examination of the crimes and his family and kind of where he came from. And I wholly recommend picking it up for yourself if you can get a copy of it. You can get a soft cover copy of it really cheap and easy. The hardcover copies are way more expensive and harder to find. But if you want to read, I definitely recommend it. As is always the case with any of the serial killers we do, we're not going to start this story off with Dahmer himself, but with his parents, as we typically have in the past. Married on August 22nd, 1959, Lionel Herbert Dahmer and Annette Joyce Flint had hoped for a new life together after a short period of dating. Both of them, however, as we'll find out, were far from a good match. Lionel was glued to his work as a chemist, paying little attention to his new wife and spending most of his time within the labs doing work. While Joyce, on all accounts, seemed to be a what you would consider either a textbook narcissist or a textbook, someone whose textbook that insecurity rules their life. Her own father was a detached alcoholic, and Joyce would go on to say that even as a child, she feared complete abandonment. So in that, she was very demanding and needy of her husband's time, and Lionel was not really willing to bear that much free time in the first place, which, of course, would immediately lead to argument after argument and a tense marriage from the start. Shortly after being married, though, Joyce and Lionel would find themselves pregnant with their first child. The pregnancy would be very rough for Joyce, finding herself bedridden from February to March with nausea, and was forced to quit her job as a consequence of how sick the pregnancy made her. As the pregnancy wore on, her muscles would contract and tighten, eventually tightening so bad and causing such severe pain that their doctor, Dr. Dean Spires, I love that name, decided to give her a muscle relaxing injection. This is in 1959, 1960 at this point. So, like, yeah, he basically had to give her a muscle relaxant injection, and because all her muscles were just like completely contracted all the time. Joyce, yeah, it's really weird. I've never heard of anything like that happening. If any of you listeners out there have known or family members or have experienced something like that, I'm curious how common it is, like, that through the pregnancy, your muscles just get tight. It seems awful.
Did they mention, is like, all of her whole body?
They just said her muscles, so they didn't really specify as to, like, what it was, where on her body, just that her muscles would tighten and cause pain. I would imagine it was probably stomach muscles, you know, would be my guess.
So one time when I was in high school, I was in a play, and I don't know why this lady told me this. Maybe I've said this on the show before, I can't remember. But she was like,
this so far sounds unique. I've never.
She was like sewing up my costume or something while I was wearing it. She was like making it fit my arms or something, right? And she was like telling me about when she had her daughter, And she was like, oh man, it was crazy. I was throwing up my own shit. I was squeezing my muscles so hard.
Oh God. Why would, did she know you, this lady?
Not really. But I was like, whoa, that's really interesting. Like I did, like, I don't know. I don't know why that's like what she decided to tell me.
Jesus.
But I was like,
that's
whoa.
That's a random thing to just share with a child.
I never forgot that. I mean, I was like 17 or something when I heard that, but it just
okay,
fucking,
yeah, you're old enough to hear it, I guess.
Yeah, but it's just, so weird. Yeah, like, so maybe those muscles can squeeze pretty hard. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, clearly. Well, thank you for that, Alex. I now feel further educated in pregnancy. So Joy's having a rather rough pregnancy was open to complaining quite a bit. She would bitch about how loud their neighbors were. They lived in an apartment complex. She would say hearing people's pots and pans became intolerable to her. And she would berate Lionel so much so for all of this that he eventually just gave up and boxed up all their belongings and moved them in with his family member, Catherine Dahmer, with his wife, who was at that point now 7 months pregnant with their first child.
The Dahmer family.
The Dahmer family, yeah. It's kind of weird to hear it in a context that it doesn't involve him.
Right.
Yeah, so, yeah, 7 months in, he just, with the pregnancy, he just gave up, quit the apartment, and moved in with his family just because she would not stop bitching every single day. But luckily for Joyce, on May 21st, 1960, her pregnancy would finally come to an end as Jeffrey Lionel Dahmer was born at the Evangelical Deaconess Hospital in Milwaukee. And for the first time in their marriage, already you're like, I see both of them took a big breath. And
I'm
like,
thinking to myself, sigh. Man, Jeffrey Dahmer was born, man. Oh, man. Oh, Jeffrey man. Dahmer. Oh, man. That guy sucks, man.
Oh, he does.
Burr. I don't want him to be alive in this story. Oh.
Well, it'll be interesting because little Jeffrey Dahmer is very different from the Jeffrey Dahmer that kind of he turns into at age 14. Age
little
14
Jeffrey
is
Dahmer
where...
is the worst character on Muppet Babies.
You already pitched. You already pitched a show. Like you just say the words, little Jeffrey Dahmer. And he's got the little
knocking on Netflix's Dahmer. Door. I've got a great idea for a prequel sequel.
He's got the little Stewie Griffin like
little Jeffrey Dahmer. All right. We'll work on that. We can tweak that for a little bit.
Little Jeffrey
Dahmer. I can't. Now I have like the Muppet Babies theme song
little
in my head.
Little Dahmer.
Yeah. It's there.
Oh, God. Well, with Dahmer now born, for the first time in their marriage, having Jeffrey seemed to bring a bit of peace about the house and family, almost as if their issues with one another went on pause. Joyce started to scrapbook, marking every little advancement her kid had. And Lionel seemed less attached to his work as they were more entranced by their new son.
Imagine how fucked up your life is if Jeffrey Dahmer showing up calms you down.
Like, imagine giving him birth and he's just emotionless as he's born, not crying. He's just staring at the doctor dead in the eyes. But yeah, like that first year genuinely seemingly seemed to be like a normal year of life for them. But eventually the magic of a new baby would wear off, kind of like honeymoon phase with a kid, I guess. Slowly but surely, Lionel found himself at the labs more and more, while the demanding schedule of being a mother took its toll on Joyce, driving her into nervous breakdowns and anxiety attacks. She was so fed up with the demanding schedule of being a mother and feeding her own kid that she bound her breasts and no longer allowed her infant child to feed from her, which caused a huge argument between her and Lionel. Yeah, she just was like, no more titties for you, Jeff. You're done. And he was not even a year old. Like, he was still...
That's like if there was, like, three more rows of bingo that might be on the list, but...
I feel like this is one of those we just, like, scratch the surface just a little bit. Because the idea that a person would be like, time to bind my boobs is like a... like, that's a whole other thing, right? Like, that isn't... You just don't do that because, like... Stop. I would rather you not milk of me anymore. That seems like a whole other thing.
I wasn't aware of it as a thing if it was a thing before this.
Well, now you know. She did it. And that's where my question between whether she's just simply insecure or she's insecure and a narcissist is like where kind of I struggle. It was, you know, as an example, after they had an argument about her no longer allowing, you know, her son to feed from her, Joyce, after the argument, simply walked out the front door and left. And she did not return until Lionel went out and found her laying in a nearby field of tall grass in her nightgown. So much, she was so defiant and apparently threw such a fit that her own doctor scolded her for her behavior.
What?
Like the, yeah, Dr. Dean Spires scolded her for being so impetulant, just like being a kid. And there's another example of this as well, where they had a huge argument at night, her and her husband. This actually happened before Jeff was born, early in the marriage. And the argument, after the argument, she stormed off in her nightgown again at night with nothing on her feet, hands, and it was sleeting outside. And she walked to the nearby park and sat down on a bench while sleet came down from outside in the freezing cold until Lionel came and got her. That was the only way she would go. So she just sat outside and just bared terrible weather for the sake of proving a point, it seems like. I don't know. But again, that's like narcissistic
behavior. Very Brontian.
Behavior.
Very Brontian.
Eventually, however, they would have to move out of their family member's home and back into a place of their own. And so they got another apartment back in Milwaukee. Lionel was now working toward his master's degree in analytical chemistry, and the move made sure he was closer to campus so he could continue his school. Also, he was working full time at the labs as well, so he was very unavailable. Even if Joyce hated the idea, she had no choice but to move with him.
Sick.
And once moved in, Joyce once again did the complain every day about the neighbors, the noise, the pots and pans, the footsteps, anything and everything that could be heard. She made sure to inform Lionel how much she hated it.
It's like the House of Usher.
However, on the flip side, and this is where that narcissistic manipulation angle kind of comes in, Joyce was also keeping the apartment absolutely spotless and consistently sought reassurance from Lionel that she was doing a good job and that she was loved. So she, you know, she's like bitching at him about all these things, but at the same time being housewife and trying to be great and all this other stuff, you know, and Jeff at this point is only about 2 years old, you know? So it's just like, it's a weird household. Jesse, you look like you're about to say
nothing.
Something.
I would just like to preempt the internet by saying, Mathis has used the word bitching as a term of complaining and not saying, in fact,
yes,
that the mother was a bitch.
I bitch all the time. Like I just
putting it out there. I don't want anyone to be like, what is Mathis implying about this woman? Just
Lord,
putting
no.
it out there.
I just use bitching as an adjective to complain.
The internet. It's what I do for a living.
Oh, yeah.
You gotta make
now I'm like, I've definitely used bitching in other ways before like that. I'm sure of it. Like, I
don't know.
This is
the first time I've heard this. I feel like you've got it in for her. I don't even know this woman yet. And it seems like you've got it in for her,
Mathis. Both the mother and the father are equally terrible people for totally different reasons. I promise.
You didn't say the father was bitching Mathis.
Oh, we're going to get to what the father is doing in a second. Don't you worry. It's coming. It's coming.
Nice.
So yeah, she went like out into the, and again, that just seems like a very insecure thing to do at the very least, that need to see that she's wanted and desired and that he'll come chase after her. No matter how bad the weather is, she'll endure it if it means seeing that he'll physically come and get her and shows that he cares. It's, you know, that it's just fascinating to look at it. And, you know, all this while Jeff being two, this is all soaking into his brain one way or another, because they're constantly fighting at home and it's not like a peaceful house at this point anymore. So after they all moved out and they moved into their new area, again, it was a new apartment. She kept the house all super clean and all that. Little Jeffrey was about 2 years old at this point and had already begun showing a big interest in animals.
Little Jeffrey, big animals?
Little Jeffrey and his big animals. He had a pet turtle that he cared for greatly, that his mother said, quote, he handled with such love and care. And now at this point, they got him a pet dog to keep him company while, you know, at the house, since he didn't really have much of us. They didn't really go out or anything like that. The apartment had afforded the family would be yanked up again just 2 years later when Lionel finishes his degree and took a job at the Iowa State University. But this time it was no apartment. They were actually going to move into their very first house in Ames. And eventually Jeff, even in that house which was out near nature, had a little bit of woods near it. Being such a fan of animals, there's pictures of him and his mother where he had befriended a wild squirrel that would come to his bedroom windowsill and he would feed it food and stuff. And eventually he was able to pet it and kind of like connected with this little wild squirrel that would come by every day to hang out with him for a little bit and get food.
What?
Kind of cute. Yeah, there's a picture of him and his mother feeding the squirrel out there.
Why do I feel like you're like Chekhov's gunning me for like horrific things that are about to happen?
So, what gun did I put down? What horrible thing are you expecting now? Like a brutally mutilated squirrel?
Yeah, yes.
All right, we'll see what happens. I can't spoil anything. We'll see what happens. But Jeff, for the first time, was surrounded by natures and woods, and he quickly took to exploring the nearby area with his pet dog. Just under a year after moving, things would take a rough turn for Jeff, however. In 1963, Jeff began to complain of stomach pains beyond that of just like a normal stomach ache or gas. Eventually, 4-year-old Jeff Dahmer had to be brought to the hospital to have a double hernia operation, leaving him hospital-ridden for over a week. Yeah, he had to have a hernia. He had like a massive hernia that was just causing extreme pain. When he woke up from the anesthetic and surgery, all he felt was a searing pain so bad between his legs that he asked his mother if they had removed his genitals. Now, mother didn't say what she had answered to that. That's not, we don't know, only that that's what she
probably
said.
Probably no.
He asked. Yeah, well, I imagine no is the answer, but all we know is he asked, and like it was that painful for him. And, you know,
it makes me feel horrible.
Yeah, it's not pleasant, you know. There are people out there who do wonder if this surgery, this very traumatic experience, triggered something in him, where the surgery took place, the idea of like someone exploring his insides, hands, you know, inside wounds. And we're going to get to that aspect in a little bit. But it's one of the theories out there. It's not one I ascribe to personally. But people see, there's a lot of people who look at this instance and say, this is what turned him.
Like he was traumatized by surgery?
Yeah, like this surgery fucked him up so bad that it put him on a path that would eventually lead to him being a serial killer. And I don't...
Really? That seems a little bit oversimplified.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
I agree with you. I agree. I don't think that that's the case either. But, you know, just kind of putting that out there. Whatever the case, after this surgery, his parents noted that Jeff did become more insular, quiet, and to himself. That's not to say he didn't have friends as a kid, though. He and a couple of his friends would actually often go exploring long tunnels in the area, like those ones that go like concrete tunnels, that like sewerage tunnels type things.
Sure.
Because he said he liked them because they were dark and spooky. And like any kid with the chance to do something bad with the potential to get away with it, he and his friends would grab bricks and huck them through the windows of abandoned houses with his friends. Not people, the houses that people lived in, abandoned homes. But eventually they got caught for that by the cops, with the cops making a visit to the parents' home and letting the parents know, which, of course, he got scolded for.
Admittedly, that all sounds like normal young kid hijinks. Yeah,
I agree
with
you.
Like, ill-advised, but not
right.
Yeah, but I did dumb, stupid shit as a kid where that was like, you know.
Kids be doing dumb stuff all the time.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, exactly. But other than that, beyond that, his fascination and love of animals and insects did continue to grow and flourish. In fact, he loved to spend his time on the outskirts of Ames, Iowa, where there was a place that did studies on barnyard animals. Later, Dahmer would learn that that place had something to do with radiation testing on the animals, but he never knew exactly what. Oh. But when he would go, his favorite thing to do was to simply stand on the outside and watch the animals for hours. His curiosity eventually would win out, and Dahmer attempted to enter one of the abandoned buildings on the testing facility property. There on the front steps as he approached lay a swath of dead mice and rats. But determined still, Dahmer approached and pushed past them, opening the front door. As he opened the front door and light poured in, mice and rats scattered across the floor, filling the floor with movement. Dahmer claims he immediately ran off, and mice and rats would even spill out of the door down the stairs as he ran away. He loved to go just stare at animals. He notes one time he remembers one of the workers with a long rubber glove shoving his hand into the rectum of a cow, and he was fascinated by what they were doing, just pure interest as he watched them. It's very strange. And keep in mind, he's like 6.
Yeah.
5. Like, he's not like 10. He's seeing all this stuff as a young
it's
kid.
Up. It's weird.
Yeah. And remember, like, why is he going out all by himself at 5 years, 6 years old? The 1960s were a very different time. And he was living out in more of the middle of nowhere, not a lot of people around, and they kind of like know the area well. But back then, there was less concern that kids were going to get snatched off the street by strangers, people that were way more trusting back then. So yeah, just an interesting note. And again, another little red flag of like, that's kind of weird, but maybe, you know, not necessarily something that indicates a horrible future for the kid. And at the age of 5 years old, Jeff, with another little red flag, ended up finding some bones of a long deceased animal under the house in a crawl space and became fascinated with them. He played with them regularly and called them his fiddlesticks. As he continued to play with them, he said he would begin wondering if the fiddlesticks inside other animals felt the same when they were on the outside.
What age is this?
He's five.
I mean, I know it sounds cuckoo bananas crazy. He's like, I want to know if the fiddlesticks, but
it could just be curiosity.
Yeah, that's the thing. None
kids
of
love
is...
bugs, and kids love, like, if they find bones, they're going to be like, oh, bones. There are bones in me. There are bones. Like, this is kid stuff. Yeah.
None of it is.
Yeah, you have to try and look at this through the lens. Yeah, you try to look at this through the lens of what he doesn't, not what he becomes, just like where he is in his present life and
what he's
surrounded by.
He's just doing kid things.
It is interesting looking back, right? Like, it is interesting that that's a thing, right? But that's not us saying that, you know, it's obvious that you're going to be a serial killer if you're into gore.
Yeah, like, kids,
absolutely not.
Kids love bugs, but I'm not terrified like a bug kid's going to end up being the bug lord.
A bug kid.
I bury you. I bury you in bugs. I'm not like worried about that shit. So
the bug kid versus air bug hypnosis.
Bug kids. They're out there.
A bug kid. I get you.
The bug kid, yeah.
We'll find you, bug
kid. I mean,
kid.
It's true, though. I mean, there are goths out there all over the place. You know, they're not killers. They're just into that kind of... I'm very much into morbid true crime stuff. Hello, I'm right here. I'm talking about it.
Right.
But at home, even... So we found his fiddlesticks. He's 5 years old. And his home life was continuing to deteriorate, particularly the relationship between his parents. Joyce had become so depressed and so neurotic, as the husband had described her, that she was now drinking heavily to deal with her depression and insecurity. And it's also important to note that her father was, like I said earlier, an alcoholic. Alcoholism tends to run in the family, tends to be a genetic thing. And Lionel continued to work and remain distant, dealing with the issues at home by simply not being home. In 1966, Joyce made an attempt on her life, overdosing on Secanol, but it's still debated as to whether that was an intentional attempt on her life or simply be her being careless with what she was imbibing that particular day. Mm-hmm. So, you know, but it could go either way. Still a very traumatic experience. Domestic violence even started to become part of the equation. When Joyce was screaming at Lionel and she, quote, needed to be calmed, the father would begin to hit her. Though Dahmer would note, this is interesting to kind of look at, Dahmer noted that when his father hit his mother, it was never, quote, with brutality or malice. It was simply to calm her down.
What the hell does that mean? What the fuck does that mean?
I don't know. I don't know how you hit somebody without brutality or malice.
I know exactly what that means. Boy, that's a weird thing to say.
And gaslighting the wife as he was hitting her.
Like, you know those old movies where the woman's like, I'm losing my mind. The guy's like, snap out of it.
Yeah.
I feel like it's that kind of thing, but
I guess
it's still a crazy thing to say.
You shouldn't slap your wife for any reason.
Right. You just shouldn't do that. But I think that's what he's trying to say.
So
that's the justification.
Husbands were hitting their wives unnecessarily a lot more often back then. Yeah, it's weird. It's a weird line, and one I definitely noted as well. It's just like that's such a weird internalized thing.
But it does go to a state of mind of disconnection from things of that nature. So violence towards others. Well, there's no emotion there. It was all just what I was doing or what he was doing. So, you know,
it's another little kind of just flagged plant. So as most people do when their marriage is falling apart, what do you think their cure-all answer was, boys?
Beating the shit out of their kid.
Another baby.
Another baby. Bingo.
I watch Jerry Springer. I know how it works.
Lionel finished his studies and got a job in Ohio, meaning the family was about to be uprooted once more. And His wife had become pregnant again. 6-year-old Jeff didn't seem to mind moving and was more in love with the idea of having a baby brother. Even though he didn't know it was going to be a baby boy, he was very insistent on wanting a baby brother. And his mother noted that he would place his head up against her belly and say, quote, "So he knows that he has an older brother," unquote. That's why he would put his face up against the
that's
belly.
That's very sweet.
Okay. Isn't that like, that's a very
but
adorable
again, that's a kid thing. Like kids is cute.
Yeah, it's a kid thing.
Like, okay. Yeah, like fine. Yeah, sure.
And he was, according to his mother, Jeffrey was so obsessed with the idea of a name that he got to name his brother when he was born. And the name he gave his brother was...
Lilberry Shoot.
Lilberry Shoot, yep. No, it's David Dahmer. David was the name that Jeff gave
Jeff
him.
Jeff knew about alliteration. I love that.
I know, right?
Yeah, it's like Stan Lee.
At this point, the parents sort of stop paying attention to Jeff and instead start paying much more attention to his now little brother, Dave. And Jeff never complained about it. He very much always kept his emotions to himself. The family moved and life continued seemingly as normal as it could. But the little red flags continued to pop up. In one instance, Jeff was roughhousing with one of his friends before his friend invited Jeff to pretend strangle him, promising that he wouldn't tell on him. Yes, you heard that right. He was invited to, you know, they were roughhousing around, be like, you can, you know, pretend strangle me. Like, you know, I imagine very much like a wrestling thing.
This is like cartoonish. Like, it's like the Tom Sawyer of murdering.
It is. I mean, like, I can imagine, like when I was a kid, when we'd always used to like play stuff, I'd always want to be the guy who got killed because I loved the death moment where you got to be like,
yeah, right?
And I just like play it up, be a goofball. So like, I get it, but I'm also like, I never said strangle me.
Right?
Yeah. Not that didn't come until you were like 18, 19.
Right. And usually I'd have to really ask for it. You know what I mean? Like squeeze harder. Right?
It's interesting. And of course, Jeff went along with it and he placed his hands on him. And as soon as he started strangling, pretend strangling him, the kid broke away, ran off and ratted him out on the teacher, which earned Dahmer 10 whacks on the ass with a paddle.
Hey,
old school teaching. Now, here's an interesting question I want to pose for you. How true is this story? Because we obviously learned this through Jeffrey Dahmer. Jeff had many interviews, talked to a lot of people.
Like, this is his story.
And I don't necessarily believe, I don't necessarily not believe that he strangled a kid, but I'm very curious if he was play strangling him or if like the kid didn't actually ask and Jeff just kind of went for it while they were roughhousing.
And then said, we were playing?
Yeah, exactly.
Did they already know that he had killed 17 people when he told them this story?
Yes. We're in the post kill aspect for this story.
So if he was already fucked, maybe it is true. You know what I mean?
Maybe. What's interesting about Dahmer, and as we'll talk about later, is like when he talks about his crimes and stuff, this is what makes him so tricky. And I think why a lot of people accidentally feel for him or empathize with him is because he always plays it like it wasn't. He didn't want to do it that way. He didn't want to do it. And while I think part of that is true, it wasn't necessarily that he wanted the corpse. He just didn't want to go through the act of killing somebody to get it. It wasn't the killing that he enjoyed. It was having the product afterward that he liked. And we'll more detail about that later. So yeah, the kid ran off, ratted him out to the teacher, and the teacher whacked him on the ass with the paddle. For Dahmer, this was a mark of losing trust, of being betrayed. And that continued betrayal would continue to happen and erode in those he liked. For example, another example, his teacher at the time that he was rather fond of. And to show his appreciation, he caught her a bunch of tadpoles from the local pond and brought them to class in a tank for her. She acted super grateful and displayed the tadpoles out in class for all the kids to see. But a couple of days later, the tadpoles were missing. Only for Dahmer to discover later that they were given to another kid in class because they were all hanging out in his garage, and that's where he saw the tank that he had given her with the tadpoles swimming around. Huh. And that was another real big betrayal moment for him. And what he did though is another moment of what's going on here, because instead of being upset or crying or fighting, he simply grabbed motor oil and poured it into the tank of tadpoles, insisting, saying to himself, essentially, if she doesn't want them, No one can
he just
have
went
them.
Full GTA now. He's just
yeah, he just grabbed a yeah. motor oil, blah, 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 and now, you know, again, he's young playground. Still. Yeah, exactly. He's like 7 or 8 at this point. Now we move into about junior high, and Jeff had nearly at this point completely turned inward. Even his friends would call him pretty intelligent, awkward, and kept to himself. He seemed to show no excitement or motivation for anything, to the point where his father began to worry, asking or forcing him into sports that he was never good at and other hobbies that he never took to. But he continued to stay, like I said, a relatively calm and inward person. Very few people had become close enough friends with Dahmer at this point that he would let them into his private life. But one boy named David eventually became trusted enough by Jeff for him to be introduced to his favorite game that Jeff invented himself. And this
another David?
Not his brother David, a friend David a from school. David. A second David, exactly.
David not
and I
Dahmer.
I find, yeah, not David Dahmer. And I also find this aspect fascinating. Because it's not like, we're not about to go into like, his favorite game was Choke Me Daddy. It was something right. way weirder. The game that he created, that he introduced to David, was called Infinity Land. And the rules were fucking bizarre.
Sick.
The game involved stickmen and spirals. The stickmen, quote, the stickmen were spindly figures who would be annihilated if they came too close to one another, as each boy manipulated his little army. The spirals were tightly drawn, intensely imagined symbols of descent, whose ultimate destination was basically a giant black hole.
What the
Jeffrey
fuck?
Was 9 when he made this game up. And he would play it by himself always. David was the one and only person who got to see that game and got played with it once, and he did not take to it, and Jeffrey quickly ended the game. Yeah, it's a weird game of men made out of sticks that if they got too close and they touched each other, poof, they get sucked into the spiral and get sent into Infinity Land, essentially. I don't understand Whoa. The game. It doesn't really make any sense even being explained like this. I don't even know how to look at this in terms of like, what could it mean? Could it just be another kid thing? Yeah, I would say it could be if it wasn't stacked up at this point with all kinds of weird little things that alone could be maybe a weird kid imagination.
I mean, here's
thing.
The thing. The real thing is I've made up dumb, crazy shit like this too.
Sure. Yeah. We've all done really weird yeah. shit.
Like, I don't
And
know.
There's other serial killers who have done really weird shit that we'll talk about too. One in the future, he had like a whole imaginative like he had a whole clan of mice that he ruled over. Very weird shit.
What do you mean ruled over? Like they accepted him as their ruler?
Thank he would he thank named you, them. He you. Like they had a they were like his kingdom. He said he would speak to them and they understood.
No.
Like that kind of stuff.
He would speak like Ant-Man and the ants?
yeah, like Ant-Man, exactly. But you know, again, Jeffrey's 9 at this point. He makes up Infinity Land. This is something he's playing quite often. Meanwhile, the home was in further turmoil. Joyce had further descended, and she was on and off medication that made her nearly comatose. She had a fragile temper, and anything could set her off. David and Jeff had to keep to themselves, not getting in their mother's way or placing their life worries in front of her for fear of setting her off. Anything for just a little peace in the house, but that also meant keeping all their issues to themselves as to keep things calm. But as mental health tends to do, it all came tumbling down regardless of how hard they tried, and Joyce was sent into a mental institution for just over a month.
Jesus.
But her pill popping, even after that, never really slowed down. So we are kind of seeing the disintegration of his family at this point. Jeff, as always, because of it, blamed himself. He says there'd not been a time in his life that he can remember where his mother wasn't depressed, and he blames himself coming into existence for such. But his brother noted that Jeff often didn't open up about his feelings. Instead, what Jeffrey would do would be keep to himself and every once in a while wander off into the nearby woods, where they could occasionally hear him screaming at the top of his lungs, slamming branches of trees into other trees, and seemingly destroying things. Healthy, right?
Now we're starting to get there. Now we're starting to get to the, I'm like, oh yeah, okay.
Yeah, things are internalizing very, very,
even
very.
Even still, a lot of this stuff, like if we did not know, if like the jig was not up on this dude ending up being a serial killer.
Yep.
This just sounds like maybe like the dude from Toy Story.
Someone's going, I mean, it's a traumatic, you know,
right,
life experience.
Right, someone going
I can understand.
Through some stuff. Yeah.
It's, I get that. But, you know, again, kind of put up with everything else, it's kind of nuts. All the while, as the years wore on, we see in Dahmer a certain change in fascination. At one point during dinner, he asks his father, as they had chickens that they were eating that night, what would happen if they took the chickens out of the body, the chicken bones out of the body, and plunged them in bleach? And just excited that his his son was interested in something.
Who used the word plunge? Him?
I use that.
Father, may we plunge the bones into the bleach?
What happened if they put the bones in bleach? Father, and his father, already desperate for his son to have an interest in something, now had an interest in something that was what he did. Keep in mind, his father was a chemist. So this didn't raise any red flags for Lionel, and excitedly explained to Jeffrey what would happen. And the collection of bones slowly became something Jeffrey enjoyed. Slowly, he would take roadkill off of the road, take it home, put it on the outside, and let nature take its course until the bones themselves were exposed. Then, taking those bones, bringing them home, bleaching and cleaning them, intending to rebuild the animal at some point. But it's important to note that while that was always the intention with everything he took, he never did it. He never took them and put them back together. He just kind of had a collection of animal bones.
He liked the breaking down more than he liked.
Yeah, it was more like, yeah, he liked having them in that. It started with birds and small animals and eventually worked their way up to dead dogs on the side of the road. At one point, he took the body of what he believed to be a Saint Bernard corpse, put it in the backyard, and let the body completely decompose. At one point, even taking the skull, polishing it off, and sticking it on a branch outside and marking like a weird territory in a weird ritual. In another point, he took another roadkill dog, but in a weird change in behavior, did not let the wilderness take its course first, but instead let curiosity take control, slitting open the stomach, exploring the innards of the animal that had already been dead on the side of the road, and eventually splaying the animal up in a tree with the intestines pulled out and wrapped around the tree and the dog in some weird display, only to be discovered later by younger kids who were walking in the woods and found that and the skull. It was around the area where the skull was put up on a pike. Now we're getting into the area where he's taking a turn.
Yeah. Like he just found it?
Yeah, he would go looking for roadkill. He would go looking for roadkill. Yeah, that was like one of his favorite hobbies to do, was to just go out and find roadkill and bring it home and do stuff with it. Because with Dahmer, especially as we see him age, his fascination becomes less the animal and more the workings, the inner workings of them. What makes them up? Like what is on the inside? Morbid curiosity that I think, again, any normal teenager kid would have. I mean, you do dissections in class. I mean, he got to dissect a baby pig in class and says how much he fucking loved doing it. But like you cross that line when you decorate a tree with the intestines of a dog and leave it hung up in a weird way.
The decorating, I'm like, that's a sign. But my question for people who live in rural areas is how odd is it? And the, you know, find us on r/Chilluminati pod. Let us know. How odd is it to go looking for roadkill? How weird of an activity.
I never wanted to go looking for roadkill.
I've never felt that urge, but I also am born and raised in Los Angeles, California.
Were you ever like on a walk though, and like saw like a mostly decomposed bird or something, and like poked it with a stick and been like, "That's cool."
Yeah, but I've never been in an environment where I'm like, if I walk here long enough, I'll find a dead dog. Like I've never been in that type of situation. So I'm interested to know.
I will say, and I don't know if this makes me someone who could very easily snap and just kill everyone, but when I was young, when we would like in school dissect a frog, I'd always feel terrible about it. Like, I'd be like, super, until I cut that thing open and was like, oh, what's this inside here? And what's this do? Once I was in it, I was like, I'm going to look at this.
I feel the same way.
I don't think that makes you a serial killer. I don't think that makes you even close to one. Well,
I don't want to do this. But once I'm in, do you think once I've already serial killed one person, I might as well just keep it. You know what I'm saying? I get it.
I just think about eating it, whatever it is. I mean, Not like dead bodies on the side of the road, but you know.
Yeah, you don't see roadkill and go, I wonder how that would be on my grill.
Yeah, but when I'm like dissecting a frog.
Many
yeah.
people do. There's a large contingent of people in this country that, especially in the countryside, if something just got hit, if you like hit something on the side of the road and it's dead, you can take it with you.
That's what I'm saying. No, that's exactly kind of what I'm hinting at. I'm interested to know how is it truly strange to go looking for roadkill?
Sure.
Or is that something that a normal person would do?
Yeah, actively go looking. Yeah. Interesting. Yeah, I don't know. I'm curious too. Let us know in the subreddit. It's a very weird kind of, to me, a very weird hobby, if that's a hobby for people. But who knows? Maybe it's just a thing that people do. For Jeffrey at this point too, it's important to note, as we get to about 14 years old, Dahmer has mostly shut away his emotions. He hasn't really been able to feel them. He says he could not remember the last time he cried. And he just dealt with things by internalizing, compartmentalizing, and detaching. And that is all he knew how to do, to the point where, right around the age of 14, Dahmer didn't really know who he was anymore, but he did know that he had a fascination with corpses and a rising urge and interest in men of the in people of the same sex, in men.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
I just felt like I need to tell you that, you know, Father's Day is coming up and, you know, you can't call me daddy in front of your dad. That's just for you and me. And if you're anything like me, when Father's Day comes around, you're kind of the same old story, right? Socks, grill tools, repeat, same thing every time. And this year, I'm trying to do better. And that's when I found Quince. And they made buying a thoughtful gift for my dad so easy. Quince has all the pieces dads actually want to wear, like organic cotton silk polos, European linen beach shorts, and comfortable pants for everything from weekend hangouts to nice dinners. And the best part of it all, everything with Quince is priced. And the best part of it all, everything with Quince is priced 50 to 80% less than what you'd find at similar brands. By working directly with top artisans and cutting out the middlemen, Quince gives you luxury pieces without the crazy markups. And Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes. The shirt I'm wearing right now, yeah, look at your phone real quick. Gotcha, you can't see me, this is a podcast. But this shirt I'm wearing right now, so smooth, so light, and for me, one of the biggest things, just because of my sensory issues, is it's breathable. Like, it doesn't feel like I'm gonna be sweating just because I'm wearing this thing. I also got my dad a nice pair of blue shorts, because that dude loves wearing, basically, as long as it's blue, he'll wear it. So for the dad who deserves better than basic, Quince has you covered. All you got to do is go to quince.com/chill for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. Yeah, that's a whole year. That's quince.com/chill to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/chill. Thank you again to Quince for sponsoring today's episode.
All of these led to frustrating moments, and around the age of 14, where you could no longer handle it, Dahmer finally picked up the bottle and began to drink. This is where I see the turning point for Dahmer. As Dahmer begins to drink, you see him fully repress who he is. Alcoholism runs in his family. You're like, this is, you know, not super surprising. He would bring alcohol to school. He would drink at school and whatnot. And Dahmer, not knowing who he is, or perhaps even hating who he is, for the first time invents a new personality. This isn't who he was, but what he wanted people to see him as.
Sure.
He became a class clown. Outward, focusing inward, but focusing outward, making people laugh, having running gags. And Dahmer's schoolmates, when interviewed and asked, remember him as such. A guy who would make jokes, who would disrupt the class for a fun fart noise or say something to make people laugh.
Hell yeah.
What they didn't know is he was doing it all while he was completely inebriated. And the drinking only got worse and worse for him as life continued. His parents' marriage deteriorated to the point of eventually needing a divorce. His father hadn't even been sleeping in the same room with his mother for a couple of years at that point, and even would go out and stay in a hotel every so often. And when it eventually came to a head around the age of 15 or 16, and the divorce conversation finally happened, Dahmer wasn't ever brought up in the conversation once, but the argument as to who was going to take his little brother was. And that also sat very heavily with Jeffrey. I apologize. He would have been 17 at that point, going on 18 soon.
Well, it's possible that that's because he was 17, right? Agreed.
And that's exactly the case. But Dahmer, it's clear at this point, Dahmer takes things extremely personally. Like, again, the tadpole situation or any, like, you know, where he was kind of like, right, quote unquote, betrayed. And so, like, yeah, I agree. It can, because it's like he's 17, almost 18. Didn't matter. Like, he was an adult. The legality of where he stayed didn't matter. But the kid, for David, who was at that point, he was like 12 or 13. You kind of have to have that discussion, you know? But it didn't matter. It sat with him and it ate away at him, making him feel like he was worthless. And at this point, he had his own store of pornographic magazines. All of the magazines that he owned were gay magazines, but he wasn't ever focused on the lower half of a man or his face. Dahmer's specific obsession with men was their torsos, specifically the abs and the chest. He didn't care when he fantasized and masturbated about the loving or caring aspect. He always fantasized about just having the abs there to touch them, to caress them, to rub up against them.
Abs.
He was a man who loved a nice torso.
Abs.
That's not what that normally means, though. You know what I mean? Like, when you're an ass man, you're not like the ass.
Only ass, please, no face.
Not the rest of the body, just the ass.
Yeah. Usually you want, you know, you enjoy the rest of it.
It's a little strange, yeah.
It's important to note as well that according to Dahmer, at this point, he had actually experimented with a boy once in his life. He was 10 years old, and the child that he was messing around with was 7. And they had snuck off 3 or 4 times.
It's also, and it's not what experimenting.
Yeah,
really
that's,
means,
that's yeah, yeah.
I'm giving you his words, not mine. But yeah, they would go off in the woods into their little tree houses and stuff, and they would basically like just fuck around with each other at young age. And then they stopped, he said, because they both were afraid they were going to get caught. So he already knew, even at a young age, kind of where his sexuality was. But again, this is the 60s going into the 70s, and the internal hatred over his own desire of men was also something that was now very readily and openly eating away at him.
I feel like every time we talk about a serial killer, it always comes down to repressed sexual nature of some sort.
So yeah, there's always violence. Male serial killers very specifically.
And it's always like their upbringing was one where they weren't allowed to be themselves, so they murdered people. Like, every time, it feels like.
Yeah, I mean, again, we're playing serial killer bingo. We don't have the head trauma or any, like, the, like, molestation by the parents and
but
stuff.
But you did,
we still have
posit
a lot.
A theory about surgery, which is some type of body trauma. Yeah,
it is trauma.
So, like, yeah.
And he was 4. That was, like, very young and kind of, like...
But 4?
I know. It's weird. But the most important aspect of this time period between 14 and 18 is when the fantasies began.
The ab fantasies?
They started as ab fantasies. But eventually he realized he just wanted the person, their body, to be there forever. He didn't want the romantic connection. He didn't want the cuddling and aftercare. He just wanted their body and to be in total and utter control of it, no matter the cost. That's what turned him on. And initially, he attempted to sate those desires by jerking off. And those would sate those thoughts for a while. But eventually, those thoughts would return. And they only became stronger as he mentally gave in and fantasized about it over and over. The fantasies eventually brought him out to a nearby road, where he would spend a lot of time just sitting and enjoying the weather, watching cars drive by. But the most important part is that there was a jogger that constantly went by the area that Dahmer regularly hung out. And the fantasies went from anonymous bodies to that of the jogger specifically. And that is what Dahmer thought about for days, weeks, and months. Until one day, he decided to give in to that urge, that fantasy. He made a decision to grab his baseball bat, and wait where he always waited, where he saw the jogger every single time.
It's not good.
But as he arrived, he took his bat, put it by his side, and thought about it, fantasized about it, coming up behind him, whacking him in the back of the head, and taking him somewhere secret where he can lay with the body, lay on top of the body, run his fingers and kiss the body, and then eventually, in this version of the fantasy, leave him alive, unconscious, and hopefully none the wiser as to what happened to him. Luckily for this particular jogger, however, on this day, he wasn't on his jog, and he never came by. Dahmer let go of the fantasy after that day and never made that attempt again, spooking himself almost that he let himself go that far. And what we're seeing is a very typical serial killer ramp up, where a person who is capable of killing, who may even be having fantasies about it, don't necessarily actively go out of their way to hunt somebody down, but actively put them in a place where what they want to happen will happen.
But like, yes, he fucking did just hunt this dude down.
But yeah, he did go out and like wait.
Yeah.
But I'm saying like, yeah, it's a weird.
There's a part of this story that I think is interesting in that you're saying this is the ramp up, right? But there's a lot of people out there who, for whatever reason, like go to commit a crime or go to do a thing. And then just like this, the person they're going to hurt in some way doesn't show up.
Yep.
And they see that as a sign of like, boy, I lucked out. I shouldn't have, you know what? I was thinking about it. And that was just destiny pulling me away from being stupid.
Yep.
And that happens like all the time for people. And I'm curious why then this one's like, you know what? It spooked me, but I'll get him next time. It's very interesting.
Yeah, but when he did leave, he was like, no more next time. He was like, I'm not going to do that. Obviously, that worked, and then he went on to live a normal life.
Yeah,
episode over.
The
it was done after that. He did try to let go of the fantasy for quite a while, not going out hunting for the jogger. In fact, he never went to that spot ever again. But eventually, the fantasies were pretty much his consistent thought, and instead of thinking about
it, this is like his chicken arc, where he's like, he's going, I could have done something else with my life, but my passion, killing.
Yeah, I mean, really, and you're going to see that again. He went off from fantasizing about it once a day and kind of like getting himself off to anywhere between 3 and 5 times a day. Jeez. It's his consistent obsession. Ooh. He had bones, you know, a ton of bones at this point, and his mind is on a one-track thought where it was going to lead to something bad. And as his parents were finalizing the divorce, one night, Joyce simply took David and left the home. Lionel was left a home with Dahmer, and the next day he had to go to work. So Jeffrey drove him to work, and Jeff would have the house to himself for an entire 48 hours. With nothing but a half gallon of milk in the fridge and his own privacy, this is where he loses things completely. Jeff decided to take the car. He wanted to go for a drive. He didn't really know what he was going to do. And on that drive, Jeff came across something he hadn't come across before, a hitchhiker. Initially, he just drove right past the hitchhiker. He ignored them and
went home, and it was fun.
Yeah, like tried to leave the thoughts and leave behind the urge, but he eventually caved in, slowed the car, turned around, and went back for the hitchhiker. This man's name was Stephen Hicks from Illinois. As he picked up Stephen Hicks, Dahmer told him that he wasn't going anywhere in particular, but if he wanted a place to stay for the night, he had a house and he could get him some food and a little bit of weed and some booze. The hitchhiker, not seeing a reason not to do that, decided to say okay, and Dahmer brought him home. Dahmer initially went to go get what little weed he had left and brought it up to Steve. They smoked a bit, drank, and talked. Dahmer attempted to make a move on him, but it became very clear to Dahmer very quickly that Steve was heterosexual and had no interest. But that only infuriated Dahmer. He had him here, and he had been fantasizing about having a body like his to himself for so long. He wanted him to say yes, to be willing, but he wouldn't. In that frustration and getting uncomfortable, Steve Hicks, after a few drinks, said he was going to hit the road and head out of here. Dahmer said, no problem. He'll be right back. He was just going to go get something. That's when Dahmer went downstairs and grabbed a barbell without the weights on each side. When he came back upstairs, Steve Hicks was sat in a chair back to him. Dahmer walked up, raised the barbell bar, and cracked him in the back of the head as hard as he could.
There he goes.
Steve stood up, still awake and confused, and a small fight occurred. But Dahmer was big. He quickly pinned him down and hit him again in the head to knock him out. He laid bleeding on the floor, and almost without thinking, in a pure rage, Dahmer took the bar, pressed it against that man's throat, and suffocated him to death. When he died, Dahmer simply put aside the barbell and immediately took the body to his room. There, he stripped the body, cuddled, kissed, and enjoyed what victory he had wrought for himself, enjoying the physical body more than anything else. A night of this went by before the next day he seemed to kind of come to his senses. He suddenly panicked, realized what he'd done, and knew he needed to hide his crime. So Dahmer went out and bought a brand new knife and a bunch of trash bags. Initially, while he went to go get that, he took the body and dragged it under the crawl space of the house. When he returned with the knife, Dahmer went under the crawl space along with him and slowly removed the body parts and then the head and triple bagged them all in garbage bags. After the sun went down, he took the trash bags to his car with the intent of driving them off and kind of just depositing them in random places, buried and thrown away so they'll never be found. Here's where the first frustrating moment of police action comes in. On his way, with the body not in the trunk, but in the back seat, Dahmer gets pulled over.
Stop.
Get the fuck out of here.
For driving...
In the back seat?
For driving slightly left of center. As he was pulled over, the police called for backup and a second car arrived.
Another! Oh my God!
And they asked Dahmer to come out and... do the straight line test. Now, remember, this is the era where there is no breathalyzer test that didn't exist.
Certainly, but you're telling me these cops didn't look in this man's car and be like, those are three trash bags in the back of your car. What is that?
Well,
they probably weren't thinking about it.
You know, you make a good point. You make a very good point. This is all happening at 3 a.m., by the way. So they asked Dahmer to come out, and they have him do the walk a straight line test and so on, and he passes all of the tests. In the meanwhile, the second cop walks over his car with a flashlight in hand and flashes the flashlight into the car, openly asking what smelled so bad in the vehicle.
Fuck, man.
And Dahmer simply replied, it's garbage he's taking to the city dump. His parents were getting a divorce and he couldn't sleep, and he was hoping that a drive at night would help clear his mind. And the cop simply said,
rad,
okay,
dude. Cool.
And let him go. However, after the cops had left, Dahmer did not continue down the road. Instead, the cops, scared him a bit, and he turned around and went back home with the body, going back under the crawl space and burying it all in a shallow grave. Days would go by, and he would stress him out that the body was under there, but in yet one last strange act from Dahmer with this body, at one point, he decides to head back under the crawl space. He digs the body back up, and he digs through the bag for specifically the head. He takes the head out of the bag, reburies the body, and brings the head into his room. There, he places the head down and jerks off in front of it. He uses this head as an inspiration to take care of himself until the head became so rotted that he couldn't bear the stench any longer and got rid of the skull himself. And this is the beginning of the downfall of Jeffrey Dahmer, and we will continue next week with what happens next.
Jesus.
Like I said,
fucking hell, dude.
A very bizarre, like, youth with little red flags that accumulated, you know, really are worrying. But really, when he started drinking and he started pretending to be this, like, class clown and everybody loved him, that's when, like, he kind of just buried his true self, and him getting drunk would allow that true self essentially to come forward. And he always did it when he was drunk. That's something we're going to see next time, is he always had to be drunk to do it first. And he always had to be blackout drunk to do it. He truly had no interest in, like, the remembering of it. He remembers this one because he was drunk, but he wasn't blackout drunk. But that becomes a staple of his crimes, as in order for him to basically be who he actually is, he has to booze it down because he can't deal with it himself. He's too scared of himself. Or maybe there's an aspect of like knowing what's right and wrong. I don't want to say guilt. I don't think it's guilt. I just think he knows he can get in trouble and maybe he can get caught. It's, you know, it's a reason I think Dahmer is one of those figures or serial killers that really just kind of sticks around decade after decade.
I feel weird even analyzing it at all. I can't, like, it just, it's so strange. It's like such a part of the human psyche that I just can't connect with.
Right, exactly. And compare his like childhood to something like Gacy's or Granny, you know, Nanny Doss, you know, her horrible childhood. His was relatively, you know, it was traumatic. Yeah. But I mean, his childhood has sounded a lot similar to mine, and I ended up fine. You know, I ended up as a serial killer. Like, it just is what it is. That, you know, everybody gets, loads of people get dealt a shit hand as a kid, and growing up isn't great. But that's no excuse to be like, and this is why I murdered 17 people.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, and that's where his manipulative kind of personality, I think, comes through. Yeah. Lucky for that jogger, man, that jogger on that day was not there. Very, very, very lucky. Anyway,
god damn,
we'll wrap it up here, boys. Thank you for this part one of what I believe will be a 3-part series on Dahmer. We will see. We'll be back next week with part two. We're gonna go record a minisode for Patreon, patreon.com/illuminatipod. We love you.
It's a great website.
We'll see you next time. It is a good website. Bye.
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 Anyway, me and my wife were sitting outside indulging on our porch one night, enjoying ourselves. I needed to go to the bathroom, so I stepped back inside, and after a few moments, I hear my wife go, "Holy shit, get out of here." So I quickly dash back outside, and she's looking up at the sky in awe. I look up too, and there's a perfect line of dozen lights traveling across the sky.
Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at lower.com field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at columbuscrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.